right, if it's Tuesday and it is my only recurring responsibility, then it's Bluegrass Bios on WLXL LPFM Lexington Community Radio. I'm your host, Kyle Bigelow, and joined in, I wrote here, sweltering booth, but it's not hot in here anymore.
It's not that hot. It's been worse.
They must have, they've got the AC going in here, so we're cooled off in studio. We're at the Steam Academy on 6th Street. I'm joined by Benjineer Ben Wolf. We have a great show planned for today. In 15 minutes, or probably even sooner than that, we'll be joined in studio by musician, author, documentarian, and presumably trapeze artist as well. She's kind of a jack of all trades. Kentucky native C.D. Collins. Then in the noon hour, you can read his work in the Lexington Herald Leader and either nod along appreciably or immediately fire off a bile-covered email to his editor. Op-ed columnist Tom Eblin will be coming in to talk about some of his recent work. But before we get to our guests, Ben, did you watch the RNC in Cleveland?
I did not. I try to steer clear. I'll watch Donald when he goes up. And I noticed this morning they were pointing out some similarities between a speech. Was it Melania last night?
Yeah.
And Michelle.
I had never even heard of.
It was almost word for word. It was a little
weird.
Are
we grasping at straws, I guess, is the question
I
have.
Could like, be. They're trying to make some story. Out of, you know, they don't have too many big profile speakers because so many people are avoiding it.
Yeah.
This time around, like none of the prominent people from the party. I guess there was a little kerfuffle on the floor when they got started, like how are the delegates going to be counted and stuff like that. But that's not going to go anywhere. You got to go with what the people voted for.
When's the do you know when the next convention is?
The next convention's next week.
That's next week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we can...
So that will be...
we can look at the minutia of another...
Limousine liberals and half the Avengers will be there, and that'll
half
be
the
far...
Avengers.
They were there last time, so maybe this time too. I'm still trying to make heads or tails of all this stuff.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, they nominated Donald Trump because he was the best of those 17 candidates, and I think that's really kind of the long and short of it. If I said, okay, the nominee wasn't Donald Trump, it's fill in the blank, I'd still kind of cringe and go, oh, really? Him, her, that person? It's I don't know what's... But to nominate a game show host...
Carnival Barker.
How... I don't have kids, but if I do someday have kids, how am I going to explain this to them?
Like
short, it's got to go back at least like a decade.
What does
getting us to this point?
Yeah, well, it definitely seems to be. I mean, it seems to come from the same place as the Bernie Sanders run.
Yeah,
you know, kind of a. You know, I think 2 years ago, the prohibitive favorites were going to be another Clinton and another Bush, and let's just choose more of the same.
Yeah.
And that's half right, even though, you know, Hillary occupies a different... okay. Here's what we're going to do right now, ladies and gentlemen, because we've got kind of... We're having trouble getting the show off the ground today. So I'm going to take the show to music, and we'll be right back in a minute with C.D. Collins to talk about her latest album, Night Animals, which will be released next month, and some of her other work as well. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, we're back on Bluegrass Bios. We're joined in studio by C.D. Collins. She's a musician, author, does all sorts of... we got, once again, some... how's that sound for you, C.D.?
Hello.
Can you hear yourself?
Not really. I can start hearing myself a little bit. Not much, though. Okay.
We have, Jesus.
So, we're here, and you all better get used to us. Because we're going to make it happen. Okay, I can hear myself a little
okay,
bit.
Okay, great. We've found the problem. It's this thing as usual. Okay, so
that adapter.
We're in studio with C.D. Collins. She's a Kentucky native. She does all sorts of work. She's a musician. She's an author. She's a documentarian. Is that right, also, C.D.?
I'm a blank raiser. I can't say that word. Heck raiser. Troublemaker.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. All right. So we're going to hear a song from her new album that's going to be released at an event on August 6th. The album's called Night Animals, and this song is called Dwelling. So enjoy.
Farm when I was 16. People think it was passed to me from my family, but I put my own money down. Even as a teenager, to claim a homestead felt necessary, a place where I'd always be welcome, wouldn't be forced away. I held the deed, 56 acres, two barns, the main house, and a small tenant house. My aunt and uncle lived in the main house for a time. I lived in the tenant house, with a wood stove so porous with tiny rust holes, I could watch the orange embers inside it. Sparks drifted up the chimney, spackling the night sky. I lay under quilts, thinking of the sharecroppers before me, housing tobacco in the barn, hand-digging the 20-foot well. Before them, slaves worked this soil. Before them, Shawnee hunted and fished. I kept ducks and geese, chickens, a milk cow, my calico cat, Lady. When her kittens were born, I sat with her while she pushed her hind paws against my palms. The kits arrived in sacks like sausages, and when their calls broke, they were wet and blind. She licked them clean. I held them up one by one, touched a fingertip to their tiny, perfect paws. I could smell the earth of the womb, as Shawnee mothers must have smelled their children's warmth, wrapped in sacred bundles. As Eve must have smelled her son's warmth, the first newborn children in all the world. Did they smell the salt of the tears that were to come, the ripe fruits of the fleeting paradise? Once I was awakened deep in the night by gunfire and found my uncle clutching a rifle, swaying from whiskey. My aunt stood in the doorway wrapped in a sheet. I didn't say a word. Deep down, I believed I didn't deserve this place with all the acreage and trees. It's a different decade now, even a different century. I've torn the tenant house down, preserving the wood and tin to repair the main house. There was no basement in the tenant house, so now there's just a patch of dirt with groundhog holes, big as a man's thigh. I'm standing on the oak porch in the blue light of dusk when a groundhog pokes her head out of the hole. She emerges, slinks across the yard toward the new garden. She sways her sleek layer of fat under her rough fur. Is her breath scented with hickory nuts and cabbages? Does she know that she is a nuisance digging those holes like that? There's an elaborate burrow under there, a subterranean city. There's a continuous open season for groundhog hunting on private land. But I wouldn't shoot her, even if I had a gun. She trundles on, thinking of her babies, of food. She doesn't worry if her husband drinks, if he's lazy or envies the children. She's a loner. I'm going to fill in the holes so no one will break an ankle. They'll burrow under the woodshed, maybe, or dig under the old horse stalls. They belong here, the groundhogs, those whistle pigs floating out at dusk. The feral cats, too, and foxes with their glowing eyes. They're all welcome here, the does and bucks vaulting the old fence on their way to the pond. They are figures in the dusk, like myself, a shade darker than night. They'll outlast the big house, the good oak porch, the caved-in city, the filled-in holes.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Thank you.
That's are you from here? That's you were telling us before. That's a very it feels very Kentucky, those rural descriptions, and you're talking about the landscape, and I love that. You know, she doesn't the description of sort of like living outside of a you know, the city, you know, which I'm so used to. But you're used to something different. Could you tell us about where you're from?
I'm from Mount Sterling.
Okay.
And I grew up, such as it is, in Mount Sterling. And I taught high school there. And then I ran away from home to Boston in 1986. And I've been living in Boston for that many years. But I write about Kentucky. And Kentucky's the place that I love. So I'm very urban and very rural. I'm bicultural, and I did find a wonderful audience. People want to be told stories, and and I found a good mentor at Harvard there, wonderful writer, and I feel like I've really been taken in by the Boston community. My first CD, which was called Kentucky Stories, won Best Spoken Word at the Boston Poetry Awards.
Wow.
And so I was very moved by that. So I do have, this is my fifth CD. It's spoken word with music. I've worked with a lot of different musicians. And I also have three books. My most recent book is After Heat, that I'm going to be, which is my first novel. And I'm going to be reading an excerpt from that, I understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm curious, what made you go to Boston? What was it about that that appealed to you?
Well, I was running away from home, and I needed to get about 1,000 miles away to get perspective on Kentucky. I was teaching high school, and one of my students came up to me, and she said, "Miss Collins, you've been a wonderful teacher, and it's really time for you to leave. You need to go be a writer." And it was just this moment. She looked like Princess Leia in that moment, and like she was giving me this oracle. And so I moved up there and took a year.
Oh, sort of the hologram princess.
Yes, yes, yes,
yes.
So I moved to Boston. I took a year's leave of absence from teaching high school at Montgomery County High School, and then I took a second year. And I went to, I started teaching English as a second language at Simmons College up there. That's what I started doing. And so these guys would come over, mostly men, businessmen, that were preparing for Harvard MBAs or BU MBAs. And I would send them out of there with Southern accents, you know. They'd have, like, the Japanese Southern accent or the Italian Southern accent. And I've been writing. I'm a full-time writer now, which has made me very, very rich, you can imagine.
But you write music as well then, right?
Well, the way I work is I write the lyrics. I write the poems, I write the stories, and I do write some of the melodies, but most of the time my musicians are writing the melodies. And so I've had three different bands. One of my bands was called Rockabetti, and we have three albums. And my new album, I'm working with Santon, and he is a Russian-born, blind, autistic musical savant.
Wow.
And he'll be playing piano at our show at the Gateway Regional Arts Center in Mount Sterling, Kentucky, on August 6th at 7 p.m., free of charge, because got a wonderful sponsor. Hedberg Hall and Holbrook Implements have sponsored us. Okay. And Kay Lane in Mount Sterling, I have to say, has done an incredible job of creating this art center for surrounding counties in Mount Sterling. And it's a beautiful, it was an old Methodist church. It's a beautiful auditorium. We've got a sprung stage. And Santon, there's a grand piano. So Santon will be playing piano. He's coming down from Boston.
Okay.
And I'll be doing spoken word, and we sing together some. In the second, we're doing two sets. In the second set, we're going to start off with his parents dancing tango. And it's going to be fantastic. They're going to be up on the stage. And I just think it's incredible. I'm so moved by their story that Santon was born in St. Petersburg, Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And they realized a blind child, they didn't know he had cognitive deficits. They didn't know anything except that.
Mm.
And they realized they were not going to get services in Russia. And they moved to Boston with no language,
mm-hmm.
no job, no money, no place to live.
What year are we talking about, just for
He was born in 1991. He just turned 25. He just turned 25.
So it's Russia at that point and not the Soviet Union. So it's post...
Yes, yes. They were
post-Gorbachev.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so they left, and they moved to this town on the North Shore where I live, which is in Malden.
Mm-hmm.
And I met Santon 3 years ago. I live in an artist loft there. They took a convent and changed it into artist lofts and sold them to us as affordable housing. And I live in the Mother Superior unit of the convent, you know, the top mm-hmm. unit with the cross.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm living in the town where Santon is. And he just graduated Berklee College of Music. He went to Perkins School for the Blind for 20 years. And he's played with Natalie Merchant. He's played with Bob Weir. He's played with Livingston Taylor.
Okay.
He's a musical savant. He's incredible. And he can get our accent right.
Oh, wow.
No one else gets it right. Everyone else is offensive. He'll say, I'd like a large sweet tea and some pulled pork. And
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can say sweet tea.
Yeah.
With the Southern accent, you pretty much cracked it, and then everything else just kind of opens up.
I totally agree.
How has working with Santon been different for you and your creative process than a group like, I can use my imagination with a group called Rockabetti.
Yeah.
How has it been different working with this kind of musician?
Well, with Rockabetti, with my first band, which was called Pin Curl, was all female. We call it chamber rock because there were people that were classically trained. We had a viola player and rock musicians. And when I had first moved to Boston, when I had first gone to Boston, I actually saw this all-female rock band. And I thought, this is a great place to move. This is really cool. And it turned out that two of the women in that rock band were later in my band. And so that was chamber rock. And that was kind of being led by this woman, Sandy Zaragoza, and she was kind of in charge of it. But we were at the beginning of the spoken word with music movement. So I was part of that resurgence.
Oh, sort of like John S. Hall, King Missile type stuff?
Well,
or Maggie Estep? Or...
It's I don't know who those people are.
Oh, okay.
I'm a writer. I'm a writer, so I don't spend a lot of time listening to music. But it was more like this guy that I don't like very much, who was Jack Kerouac.
Really?
But he did it with jazz.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a resurgence in the early 90s
yeah.
of spoken word with music, poetry with music, and I was part of that. And I'm really proud of that. We had the Jeff Robinson Trio. We had this band, Pin Curl, and they said, we've got this band, come in and do poetry. We weren't thinking we're the resurgence of spoken word with music, but we actually were. And I knew Patricia Smith and Michael Brown, who bought Poetry Slam to Boston from Chicago.
Oh, okay.
So these were pretty exciting times in a literary way in Boston. Working with Rockabetti, it was more, I had someone singing harmony with me. She played the banjo. It was more folk and country and blues and gospel. And playing with Santon has been different because we don't communicate except through the music. We communicate in this place where there's no disability because he has a lot of disabilities that he's working with, but he has this one area of genius, And so he expresses himself through the music. Like, he'll say, what about this? And he plays it. It's not like we're talking about it. He's communicating through his music. And I think his mother thinks that he hears my voice as a song. Hmm. And he's responding to that song.
Wow.
And I'll say, Santon, let's do a tango. Write me a ragtime. Let's have this be blues. Yeah. His repertoire is enormous.
Yeah.
So this album has a lot of different musical styles on it. So that's different, too.
Will this be the first time that you've performed live together?
No, it won't be. However, this is the world premiere of our CD.
Wow.
So it took us 3 years. We got a grant from the Massachusetts Cultural Council to complete the CD. Mm-hmm. We were going at breakneck speed to have it ready for... It just came in. It just came in the mail. So it'll be the first time it'll be available to the public. We'll be selling it that night.
Speaking of CD, we're talking to CD Collins. She's a Kentucky musician.
He's getting good at that.
And author.
Segway.
Yeah.
For more information about all of her work, go to cdcollins.com. You can go to gatewayregionalartcenter.com to find out more information about their world premiere release of Night Animals on August 6th in Sterling, Kentucky. The event is free and open to everyone. So you forwarded us an excerpt of your latest novel, After Heat is the name of it. And I was hoping you could read for our audience. You gave me two choices, and I chose chapter 5, so... Maybe you could read that for us.
Okay. The Carousel Lounge. Saturday nights, my family ate dinner at the Carousel. Mom would have rather stayed home, but Dad liked to socialize. The dinners tasted good at the Carousel Lounge. Catfish and hush puppies, T-bone steaks with Diego salads, homemade cream pies. They serve lamb fries with white gravy there, too. And if you don't know what that is, well... Just try some first, and then maybe we'll tell you. All the booths had individual jukeboxes, red and white check tablecloths where your husband might be talking confidentially to someone nestled back in the shadows. Dallas tried to run a tight ship. No drunks, no fights, or he might set you on the sidewalk. You could decide for yourself whether to go home where you belonged, or else swagger on down to the Alibi Club, where they open their doors to anybody, and where you might get yourself shot just for asking a lady to dance. Styles were less casual back then. Sports jackets and creased trousers, expertly ironed dresses, were what we wore for a simple drive in the country. 60s women were curvy, the men lean. As farmers and carpenters, they worked, not worked out. Mm-hmm. Nights out, my father's hair gleamed with pomade. My mother's blonde mane whipped into a variety of ringlets, turrets, and waves. She visited these afflictions on me as well, and a perm tomboy is a pathetic sight. One Saturday morning in June, I worked at the kitchen table, snapping the ends from half-runner beans and zipping out the tough string. My grandmother had taught me how to string beans on her front porch, to be careful not to break off too much and waste good food. After I filled the white enamel basin, Mom rinsed the beans and put them on to boil. Time moved slowly back then, and there was plenty of it. Time for grooming, time for conversation. Country women kept up with the news through party lines. 10 or 12 houses with the same number lowered the price. You could pick up the phone any time and join the conversation. Dad insisted that we have a private line, but he swore that my mom could talk for an hour to a wrong number. Saturday mornings, Carmen Gray visited without fail. Tall and full-busted with a gap between her front teeth, Carmen always had a deep suntan by April. "Morning, sleeping beauties," she exclaimed, stealing through the back door and ambushing us in the kitchen. "Oh, hush," Mom answered. "I've been up since 7 o'clock, picking beans before it got too hot." "Well, that was smart," Carmen said. "It's supposed to hit 100 today. Where's that Cletus?" Mom tore a slice of salt rosin toast and handed me the good burnt part. She told Carmen that Dad had run over to the new hardware store. "It's over by the old Kroger," she explained, "between Hyler's body shop and the mill. probably picking up a six-pack while he's at it. "Oh, Lord," Carmen shouted. "I'll bet you a silver dollar my Buster is with him." She turned and left, letting the screen door slam. "We're going out to the carousel tonight," Mom hollered after her. "We'll meet you down there," Carmen yelled back. Full disclosure of a person's whereabouts was expected. Ditto inviting oneself to dinner. You never heard the words appropriate or boundary, or carcinogenic for that matter, as we doused our gardens with DDT. We lived our daily lives under a rainbow of trust in the future. Dad had big dreams, and he didn't mind working hard for them. He also liked to have a good time. Like his father before him, this required a bottle. You had your Miller High Life, you had your barrel-aged bourbon. Before we left for the carousel that evening, I appeared in the kitchen in jean shorts and one of my brother James's worn-out shirts with the sleeves torn off. "Well, heck, Ruby," Mom said. "Wear what you want. I'm too tired to fight you." She lifted the last quart of green beans out of the boiler and set it on the counter with the others. All afternoon, the jars had made a sucking snap that meant they'd been sealed. Defeated by guilt, I changed into a yellow sundress, matching anklets and patent leather shoes. I couldn't even run in this getup. If I died trying to escape Jack the Ripper, it would be Mom's fault. I dreaded dinners at the Carousel Lounge as much as I looked forward to them. Despite Dallas's best efforts, come Saturday evening, the night could end with couples jitterbugging and kissing on the dance floor, or with curses and gunfire. It was anybody's guess.
Wow. That's C.D. Collins. That's an excerpt from her book, After Heat. The first thing I notice, and you describe yourself as a storyteller in the Southern tradition, the descriptions of food and taste seem to be sort of a part of the Southern sensibility of writing.
For me, according to my mother, I've always mm-hmm. loved food. And in my high chair, I would finish eating a drumstick and just mm-hmm. throw it across the kitchen and laugh. And when I got full, I would just rub the food through my hair and on my body. I just love the food. And I have a birthday coming up on July 22nd, and I've invited some friends over. And my hope is that somebody is going to make me yellow cake with warm caramel sauce. That's what I'm hoping. Does that sound good?
That sounds really good, yeah.
35?
I'm really proud of my age. I've really earned every single second. I'm going to be eligible for reduced subway fare. Mm-hmm. That's what year I'm turning.
36. I was hoping you could explain to us why you titled what I read was After Heat is sort of a semi-memoir for you, right? It is a fiction.
It is fiction, and it's kind of a juicy subject. Why I write fiction and not memoir. I write fiction because I want to use the tools of fiction. I want to have it be lyric. I want to be free to say what I want to say. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be confined by memoir. One of my favorite novelists, Marilynne Robinson, says, "Fact explains nothing. Mm-hmm. On the contrary, it's the fact that requires the explanation." So I'm not writing journalism. I'm not writing memoir. And I want to protect people. And I want to be free. Mm-hmm. And the trajectory of Ruby Chambers' life, which has some autobiographical content based on me, is mm-hmm. not the trajectory of my life. Mm-hmm. It's not very interesting to read about somebody who grew up to be an author. If I've read that once, I've read it a million times. Yeah. It's not an interesting story. And so that's another reason not to write memoir. I want the characters to have their own arc. I want the story to have its own arc and find its own way. After Heat is a term. You remember when they had the tsunami and they had the nuclear explosion in Fukushima, Japan? Mm-hmm. They could not put that fire out. That's a nuclear fire. And it's so dangerous because they can't put it out. And that phenomenon is called afterheat. And memory can be like that, can be like a fire that you can't put out. The autobiographical content in Afterheat is based on a gas explosion that I was in 1961 in Clark County. And 50 years later, this same pipeline, this underground gas pipeline, blew up again. And there had been a gas, these gas lines blow up all the time. Mm-hmm. They're dangerous. And there had been a fire in San Bruno, California that killed a bunch of people. So they started with the trying to make a Pipeline Safety Act. And somebody that we know from Kentucky tried to block it. I'm not going to say his name, but he used to do eye exams. And and he blocked it because he didn't like the idea of regulation. And he held it up and he held it up for a few months. And then he's like, well, all right, if you do it my way, then we can pass it. So they did pass it, and they're doing safety inspections. Celis Wilder did a documentary called The End of the Line about how some grassroots Kentuckians, right, left, red, blue, nuns, stopped the bluegrass pipeline, you know. And he used some footage from a short documentary that I had made about my what happened to me. And I have a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder based on this event.
I would imagine, yeah.
And he used raw footage from my video. And it caused the DVD, caused the movie to have a rating where you screened people out based on age because it showed traumatic injury. And it was miraculous that I survived that at 10 years old.
I was hoping you could tell us the story. Because I read about it, but it sounded, I mean, there were no pictures, but you were 10 years old, this pipeline, a 30-inch pipeline exploded while you were driving through Sterling?
Mount Sterling.
Mount Sterling, and a rock pinned your car down?
Yeah.
Could you take us from there?
Sure. And if I get triggered into PTSD, you'll be driving me to the hospital.
Of course.
So, yes, what happened was that I was actually in Clark County. We're going skiing. I was 10. My brother was 11. My mother was with us, another family. And we drove by this field, and there was this enormous explosion. And my brother and I started laughing because 1961, jets were always breaking the sound barrier. We thought it was a jet breaking the sound barrier. And then suddenly all this stuff rained down and stopped the car. We had a boat behind us. And we had to get out of the car. We couldn't run forward because everything was on fire. We couldn't run away because the other field was on fire. We had to run beside the fire. And so that's how we got burned. The fire was, you could see the fire from counties away. You could see the smoke of the fire from the next state. It was a big fire. It melted my skin off on my right side.
Oh.
And I spent a year in the hospital. And it was a very extreme event. I gave a reading from Afterheat at the Winchester Public Library in January. And at the end of the reading, this woman raised her hand and said, "My husband turned off the gas. He's the one who turned off the gas." And we thought the whole plant had blown up. And then another guy raised his hand. He goes, "I was 20 at the time. We thought it was super exciting. We were on the other side." So they went and saw the station wagon that, you know, I don't know if it caught fire, the boat behind us, and he saw the scene. And there were two infant children with us, and my mother picked one up, and the other mother picked one up. And when I was giving this reading, someone raised their hand and said, "I was the baby in the car."
Wow.
And this is my brother. He was the other baby in the car. I had never seen them since. So that was deep, to see these beautiful kids who have no memory and were, you know, have small burns but no memory of it.
You chose to take an actual photo of yourself and put it on the cover of Afterheat.
I did.
That shows the scars that you incurred as a child.
Yes.
Why did you choose to do that?
Well, so I could explain it for the next 50 years, why I'm claiming that it's a novel and I put a picture of myself on the front. On the back, there is this painting of that I saw in Boston, and I walked in and I saw this woman had painted these two kids that were about my brother and my age at the time in a woody station wagon, which is what we were in. We were in a woody station wagon. And I thought, I've got to have that on my novel. And I asked her if I could use it. And then, so I was going to have that on the front. And then my friend Babette Myers took this photograph of me at 34, of me with the burn scars. And I had always been told to face my burns away from the camera. And she said, you know, your scars tell a story, and they're quite beautiful, and we're going to put them against a pattern of lace, and we're going to call the series Body Lace. And so she took those photographs, and I feel like the intensity of my gaze in that photograph tells a story. And this is a photograph of me. There's some autobiographical content in it, but it's also a photograph of Ruby Chambers, who does go through the same. So that's where art is meeting life. And I think it was not easy to put a picture of myself showing my burn scars, basically naked on the front of my novel. But it was a difficult choice, but I think it was a good choice. What do you think?
I think it's a good choice.
Yeah, it really is powerful. We're in studio with C.D. Collins. She is a Kentucky native, self-described hellraiser.
I can say hell.
You can say hell. That's on the good list. Yeah. For more information about her work, like After Heat and the upcoming album Night Animals, you can go to cdcollins.com. The world premiere of Night Animals will be held Saturday, August 6th at 7 p.m. at the Gateway Regional Arts Center in Sterling, Kentucky.
Mount Sterling, Kentucky.
Excuse me, Mount Sterling.
That's only a few miles from here.
I'll only do that three more times, I promise. Live performance of the new album. The event is free and open to everyone. Wow.
And I would like to get people from communities with disabilities in there. Okay. It is free. It's accessible. The blind community, autism community. I do want to say this is not appropriate for children. Mm. High school, yes. Adults, yes.
Okay.
But there's content.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm curious kind of about, the word process is kind of overused a little too much, but do you sit down with an outline? Do you come up with a story, or are you one of those people who just sits in front of the keyboard and starts typing?
Well,
I guess, first of all, what do you write with?
I write with a MacBook Air.
Okay.
And I have about a 10-minute window on reading my actual handwriting. And so I'm much better off with the MacBook Air, and I can type very quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
So part of my process is I work with a writing group where we write in the group.
Oh, okay.
And it's a process where just chaos comes out. I'm not the person where the paragraphs and sentences come out well. It's complete chaos. So my process is really about revision, revision, revision.
Yeah, yeah.
And then...
well, that's the fun part anyway. It's always the rough draft when you're writing something. You're trying to fill a blank page with something.
Yeah.
And just do that, and then you can come back. I've always found revision is really just the fun part of all that.
Well, it is, I'm not, fun is not the word I would use, but and I don't find writing easy, really, but I feel really fortunate that I knew what I wanted to do when I was 4 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew what I wanted to do. And with Santon, our process is that I will go over with a piece that, you know, there's a piece, it's longer if I have a written piece.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm doing it live, in a listening piece, it's a lot of cutting to see what's going to survive through the music and how we can best shape it. So I'll do a piece and I'll take it over to Santon and say, you know, just improvise with me as I read, or I'd like this to be a certain style.
Okay.
And then it's not instant. You know, we have to really work at it. And he's going to come down a few days in advance, and we're going to really have to rehearse.
And you just do trial and error when you're trying to find, you know, the right genre and stuff?
I do. And I'm saying, that's not working. And then he'll say, what about this? And then we work with it. And what's on the album is the product of, you know, a few years of working and revising and a really good sound engineer at Wellspring Sound in Acton, Massachusetts. So I feel very fortunate that I have a good sound engineer that has a wonderful kind of microphone. It's like a $10,000 microphone, vintage microphone. And he tests a lot of microphones on my voice to see what mic likes my voice. And he knows what I'm trying to do. If I'm if I'm singing, I'm not a vocalist really. I'm just more a spoken word person. But if I need to sing something and he wants to bring that out of me, he's liable to push me across the studio and tell me I don't care about my people and get me riled up and then I'm like, I'm singing it. Get out of my way. So he knows how to mess with me.
Writer C.D. Collins in studio. Could you set up the song? We wanted to go out with another track from the new album, Night Animals. Could you set up the song Wild Rose for us that we're going to play here in a minute?
On my farm in Mount Sterling, there are, and this is true in Kentucky, there are a lot of invasive species. And I just spent 5 years getting rid of the wild roses, of the bush honeysuckle, and the ailanthus tree, tree of heaven, they call it. And I can say tree of hell, can't I?
You can.
And so I wrote this song, but, you know, a rose bush, if you have a cane that comes down to the ground, it makes another rose bush. And the seeds are, it's just crazy to get rid of them. It's really, really difficult. But I was thinking how we talk to our children, and specifically mothers and daughters. If you say things to your daughter and your mother that are difficult, I have kind of a matrilineal descent of difficult relationships. And so it's saying that if you can plant seeds in the psyche of your daughter that can be like invasive species and difficult to get rid of. So be careful what you say to your daughters.
And with that, this is a Wild Rose.
Our fields brimful with wild roses, crowding out the native tribes. No blazing star. Arching canes and backward thorns, one rose can spawn 100 kin. Exotic alien roses, or take our field in seasons few. Banish shrubs and nesting birds, shade fragile shoots and poison the dew. Mothers, mind what you say to your daughters, words of deep within our skin. Can spawn 100 kin.
Mm-hmm.
flash the canes, call forth the sun. Slash the canes, call forth the sun.
Well, it was beautiful singing there. Producer really. Must have talked trash on the cats or something to get
he
you
did.
Riled
he
up
did.
For that performance.
Thank you.
And that was you playing flute?
Yes, playing flute badly. And that Santon playing the piano well. They had two grand pianos in that studio, and there was a bright and there was a dark. And we really liked the dark. So that's him on the piano and me on the flute and us singing together.
And you were saying that he doesn't read music, he just does it completely by ear, huh?
Right. I mean, he's it's all by ear. Incredible, phenomenal memory. He does a lot of huge classical repertoire. He plays for Tango Night. He'll play tango music for hours. He's really cool, and he's really sweet. And
right.
his parents are really sweet. Julia Sverdlov, Alex Svetidenko, wonderful people. And they're, I don't know if you know anything about Russian people, they're crazy. They come to Kentucky and they take.
That's the one thing I knew, actually.
Yeah. They take Santon up sheer cliffs, you know, he's with his walking cane, and they will do things I wouldn't dream of doing, jump off huge rocks, climb up these slate waterfalls like crazy people. And they really enjoy Kentucky. They made me get, they wanted raw milk. CD, can you get the raw milk? like they had in Russia in the countryside as kids.
Yeah, yeah.
CD, wow. What are you doing? She gives me a hard time.
Well, We're gonna keep your album. We'll play it during our show, and we'd like you to come back whenever you've got something else coming out.
That's great. I'm hoping to be doing some readings of After Heat in the fall, and I'd like to be doing an event maybe at Leeds Theater in Winchester. So I'd love to come back.
Okay,
thank
fantastic.
You.
We'll be right back with Tom Eblin of the Lexington Herald Leader on WLXL LPFM Lexington Community Radio. This is Bluegrass Bios.